very fortunate having those two guys.
Yeah.
Okay, let's look at question 10 here now. Now notice how this follows upon the unchangeableness of God, huh? Just as time follows upon what? Motion, right? So Aristotle talks about motion in book 3 of the of Natural Hearing, and then time in book 4, right? So Thomas talks about the unchangeableness of God and then his eternity, huh? But just as unchangeableness involves negation of what's found in motion, so eternity will involve some negations of what's found in what? Time, huh? We know more what God is not than what he is. So the first thing is, what is eternity, right? The definition of eternity, huh? Then he can ask in the second article whether God is eternal, huh? So we know something about God already from the articles we said, and then we found what eternity is, and then we see the connection between the two. And then the third one, whether to be eternal is private to God, right? Okay. And then it goes into what? Three articles that are what? Really, well, different, right?
Comparisons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whether eternity differs from time, huh? That should be more than clear by the time we get to that article. And then the difference of the what?
Eternity.
Yeah, that's something maybe for the angels or something, right? But the language is not altogether clear, or fixed, I should say. And then whether there is one avum, as there is one time and one what? Eternity, huh? Mm-hmm. So we'll find what the obscure avum is, huh? The angels have, huh? Yeah. You can't really imagine your angel, huh?
Mm. Imagine something.
Mm-hmm. My old teacher Kasurik said you should make, you know, an act of will, open up your mind to your guiding angel, huh? Then he'll direct you more efficaciously. To the first one proceeds thus. It seems that this is not a suitable definition of eternity, which Boethius lays down in the fifth book of the Consolation of Philosophy. Mm-hmm. So, there, I give you a little copy of it.
Yeah.
Just copy of Consolation of Philosophy.
You can have a copy of that in the library.
Maybe. I think we have a Latin copy.
Yeah. Well, it's better to read in Latin. You know, yeah. Incidentally, there is a Pseudo-Thomas commentary on the Consolation of Philosophy.
Was.
Yeah, so if you look in the, it's probably in the Navari, I don't know if you look in there, but it's not, you guys, authentic, but it's pretty good. I remember years ago when I taught my brother Mark at St. Mary's College there, he's looking at that because I was teaching that or something, and mm-hmm. he found it kind of helpful, you know, so it's not by Thomas, but I mean, it's all kind of interesting things, huh? Mm-hmm. That you would notice, you know, like the Lady Wisdom comes down. She's of course represented as a woman, Lady Wisdom, not only because sapientia is feminine in Latin, but because a woman is better at consoling. but then her garments are somewhat torn, and this represents the fact that people who grabbed at wisdom have dismembered it, huh? Have torn it, right? And so, you know, you bring out these little, you know, subtle things.
Yeah.
But you have the theta up here, which represents theoretical philosophy. And the pi for practical philosophy down below.
Oh.
And so the theoretical is put above the practical, just like Mary above Martha, you know, Mary's chosen by part. And then there's some kind of a pathway up from the lower to the higher. So that's kind of platonic too, you know, because they thought you should start with the practical philosophy and then ascend to the theoretical. By the Aristotelians, they think you do math and natural philosophy before ethics and politics because of that great experience necessary for ethics and politics. So, it seems there's not a suitable definition of eternity which Boethius lays down in the fifth book of the Consolation of Philosophy. Because that was a very famous work in the Middle Ages, huh?
Mm-hmm. Chaucer translated it.
Chaucer did it into Middle English, and I guess Queen Elizabeth was trying to make a translation of it.
Oh, she was?
Yeah. And I was reading, if you read Washington Irving's there, the sketchbook there, and he's describing that Scottish prince, you know, that was left, you know, in the tower there in England, and until he finally got out. But anyway, he was reading the Constellation of Philosophy, so he speaks with very reverence of it, you know, watching every year, you know, so it's a very famous work. You got these little, you know, kind of poetic things within a prose section, you know, and, mm-hmm. but they're very, very profound. And there's kind of a mine there of things to dig out, you know, where this is. But this is the definition of eternity that he gives. It's the what? Totissimo et perfecta possessio vitae interminabilis. Huh? The what? All at once, the way you can translate totissima, and perfect possession of unending life. Quite a definition. One hell of a good definition, too, we'll see. But anyway. Now he says, you look at the objections here. And a lot of them, you know, will signal out some part of the definition and concentrate your mind on that and raise some difficulty about it and so on. So he says, interminabile, unending, is said what?
Negatively.
But negation is not of the notion of those things, except of those things which are what? Deficient, right? That are lacking. Which doesn't belong to eternity, right? To be deficient or missing anything, right? Therefore, in the definition of eternity, one ought not to lay down interminabile. Huh? Okay? Because you know the bad is what? Always a lack of some sort, right? So, how can this be in there? Moreover, eternity signifies a certain what? Duration. Huh? But duration more regards being than life. Huh? Therefore, you ought not to lay down the definition of eternity, life, but more being. Huh? Should have said the all at once and perfect possession of ending being, not life. Okay. Moreover, a whole is what has parts. Huh? But this doesn't belong to eternity since it's simple. Therefore, it ought not to be said tota. I mean, it's less of the definition you get to these objections, right?
Okay, let's go to Article 2 then.
Moreover, many days are not able to be together, right? Nor many, what? Times, huh? But in eternity, days and times are said in the plural. For it says in the prophet Micheas, his going forth is from the beginning, from the days of eternity. And Epistle to the Romans 16, huh? According to revelation of the mysteries of what? Things not said as a touchy day? In eternal what? Times, right? Therefore eternity is not all at once, huh? Okay. Moreover, whole and perfect are the same thing. And that goes back to the fifth book of wisdom, right? Where, and Aristotle actually said in the physics first, that whole and perfect mean almost the same thing. And so you get to the third group of words there in the fifth book of wisdom. The first word is perfect, and then the ones that I attach to that, and then the word whole, right? Okay? It means almost the same thing. Therefore, having posited tota, or whole, it's superfluous to add that it be what? Perfect. Now you're being redundant there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Moreover, possession does not pertain to duration, but eternity is a certain duration. Therefore, eternity should not be called a what? Possession. So that's an objection against possession, we just saw here, the sixth objection. The fifth objection is against perfect, huh? And the, what? Totissimo was in the fourth objection, and tota period was in the, what, third objection, and vita was objected to in the second objection. Every single word has got at least one objection against it. And but notice how this is very appropriate to a student, huh? Because it concentrates your mind upon every single word Mm-hmm. And every single word in the definition is essential. I sometimes say to students, a definition is a little bit like spelling, right?